Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics and self-regulation with business and industry leaders. Together, we seek to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series Podcast. I'm James Lee. Americans have a love-hate relationship with privacy. We often complain about a loss of privacy, yet we're willing to give away our private information for a free t-shirt or post it on social media in exchange for a thumbs up. Technology has only made it easier to swap private information for convenience, resulting in companies amassing treasure troves of personal data that is bought, sold, traded, and shared in quantities measured in terabytes and petabytes, amounts once thought impossible to achieve. In the U.S., a company that holds data is generally considered to be the owner of the information, not the consumer who is the subject of the information, and who traditionally has had little access and even less control over what data was collected and how it was used by a company. Until now. The California Consumer Privacy Act, or CCPA, gives California's 40 million residents unprecedented access and control over certain types of personal information, and places equally exceptional requirements on businesses, even if the business is not located in California. Here to help us understand what the CCPA requires and how it impacts businesses is Christian Audie, an attorney with one of the leading global law firms, Brian Cave Leighton Paisner. Christian, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's jump in and we'll start with the easy stuff. What businesses are subject to the CCPA and what does it require them to do?
Well, the businesses subject to the CCPA there are three different ways that you as a business, as a for-profit business, can become subject to the CCPA. The first is, well, there's the condition that you're doing business in the state of California, but as you might imagine, that's a lot of businesses. The first is that you have annual gross revenues in excess of $25 million. The second condition is that you, and this is an or, by the way, so it's not an and, it's an or. You can have $25 million in revenue, or you can buy or receive, share the personal information of 50,000 or more consumers, households, or devices, or you can derive 50% or more of your annual revenue from selling consumers' personal information. If you meet any of those conditions and you do business in California as a for-profit enterprise, you're regulated under CCPA. What does that mean? It means a bunch of different things. It means you have to provide our consumers, and consumers here are California residents, you have to provide consumers a right to access. You have to provide them a right to deletion under certain circumstances and with certain exceptions. You have to have a privacy policy that makes certain disclosures. And you probably have to deal with modifying your contracts with some of your vendors in order to make sure that they're service providers under the agreement. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. That's just kind of a high-level outline of things that you might be required to do if you're regulated under CCPA.
And that sounds like an awful lot of people, an awful lot of businesses are going to come under this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, the California effect, right? Which is to say, everybody's doing business in California, everybody's regulated by California.
Yeah, so it becomes a de facto national standard, so to speak.
It does, yes.
The California effect, as you mentioned there, you know, California has always been a privacy-forward state. You know, why did they do this? What was it that prompted them to pass this kind of a law? Because nobody passes a law for the fun of it. There had to be something that caused them to do this.
You know, it's actually quite an interesting story, James. The impetus for this law was a ballot initiative that was then pending and was even more, I think it's fair to say, unfavorable to the business community. And this law was passed in reaction to that. And unfortunately, it was drafted and passed very quickly. It was written in, I think, a week.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
That's almost unheard of.
Yeah.
It's kind of the legislative equivalent of not studying for the entire semester and then cramming the night before. And the consequence of that is that there's a lot of errors, omissions, downright drafting errors in the law, and not all of those have been cured by the amendment process. So unfortunately, we're going to go, the effective date of this law is January 1st of 2020. We're going to go effective with a law that is in less than pristine condition, I think it's fair to say.
Digging in a little bit, yeah. Most companies in the U.S. are not required to give customers access to data. And if you're subject to the Fair Credit Reporting Act, yes, you have to provide access under certain circumstances. But by and large, most businesses don't. This is going to be a big change for them to be required to give businesses access to information. How's that going to impact a business? And legally, what do they need to be doing to get ready for that?
Yeah, I think it's going to have a very significant impact on a certain subset of businesses in the United States, and those businesses would be businesses that have not had to deal with this before with respect to GDPR. This was a concept, and GDPR, of course, being the European Union privacy law, which went into effect in 2018. This was a concept that was borrowed from the EU, from GDPR. So to the extent that businesses now regulated under CCPA are also regulated by GDPR, it's not going to look too much different, although some of the information you have to provide, the manner in which you have to provide it, and the timing for that is different. For businesses that haven't had to comply with the GDPR, you know, it's a heavy lift. It requires businesses to, first of all, and this sounds very fundamental, but it's actually quite challenging. First of all, they have to understand where all their data is. Because, of course, if you get a valid right to access request, you know, a consumer says, hey, I want to see all of the pieces of personal information you have about me. You have to know where to look. You have to know where to go. You have to know where to find it within all the systems that you have. And oftentimes, clients, businesses, especially large businesses, really don't have a good handle on where all their data is. So the first way it impacts you is it functionally requires you to go out and do a data inventory and find that data. And the second way it impacts you is, of course, you've got to put together a method for responding to and collecting that data, and also put together a method for authenticating the request, for making sure that the person asking for the data is in fact the person or their authorized agent. There are a lot of hackers out there, nefarious folks that are lobbing in data requests right now under GDPR, but no doubt they're going to do it under CCPA too, for individuals that they just want to find out about, or maybe they want to try and steal their password, or maybe they want to figure out what their social security number is, et cetera. And it's a real risk. So, you know, you've got to not only find the data and provide it, but you also have to authenticate the request before you do it.
And you have a deadline to do this, correct? The law says how long you have to respond to that.
You do. You have a 45-day deadline to respond to these, but, you know, it's also extendable, so you can extend it for another 45 days. But, yeah, you've got a deadline to respond, and it's a short deadline, especially if you start getting a lot of them.
And again, these companies that haven't been in this world before of responding to data access requests, it's going to be different for them. This is not a process that they're accustomed to.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
And the corollary to this is the next thing that is also borrowed from GDPR, which is that right to be forgotten. I guess in the case of the CCPA is the right for deletion. So how does that work? And because once you find the data, you've reported the data, now they can come back and say, delete my data in certain circumstances.
Yeah, they sure can. They sure can. It, in a lot of ways, it's similar to the right to access, which is to say, you know, first, you've got to go through the response and the authentication process before you delete, like you would with a right to access. The right to deletion is a little bit more caveated than the right to access, I guess you would say. There are, if you look at subsection D, I'm not going to throw out too many citations here, but if you look at subsection D of section 105, you'll see that there are a number of exceptions to the right to deletion. And so what this requires is perhaps a little bit more involvement with counsel, at least early on, to determine whether or not you actually have an obligation to delete. You know, you can imagine circumstances where I no longer want to pay my mortgage, right? So I'm going to say, hey, you know, mortgage company, bank, delete my information. I'm not going to pay my mortgage anymore. And no, well, even if I was a California resident and I had that right, there is an exception for that for completing transactions. So you've got to, when you get a right to deletion, the first question you should be asking is, can I authenticate this person's request? Do they have a right to it? That is, are they a California resident? That's step two. And then step three, do any of these exceptions apply? And how do I communicate with them if they do?
At the core of this act, it's really about marketing data. And in this case, we're just talking about the right to deletion. There's also a companion part of this bill, which is my favorite part, which is the do not sell button. So, and that's at the core of this, right? It's don't sell my personal information without me knowing about it and giving you permission to do so. And I now have this right to command you not to do that, and I can request you delete it if it's for marketing purposes. What kind of a disruption do you foresee in that? Because again, that's a totally different kind of scenario for most businesses.
It is, and I think I think that this is probably the most significant portion of the act. Ultimately, it's going to be the area in which we see the most enforcement in sort of all of its variations from the AG, and let's keep in mind that only the California AG can enforce this portion of the act that we're talking about right now. But the first thing to recognize, and that's really important, is sale does not mean sale in any, you know, colloquial sense in which we use it. Sale is much broader than that. Virtually any interaction or any transfer of data to a third party in which you're getting anything, any type of valuable consideration back from them in any way is going to probably meet the definition of sale under CCPA. And really, the question is not whether a transfer of data is a sale. The assumption is that a lot of times it is. The question is, can we find an exception to remove it from that definition? And so a lot of what companies are engaged in right now is looking at, for example, the definition of a service provider, because transfers of data to service providers from businesses are exempted out from the definition of sale. They're saying, okay, how are we going to avoid calling this a sale? How are we going to avoid having to put that button on our website? Well, maybe we can call this a transfer to a service provider, and we can make sure that our agreement with the service provider meets the requirements so that vendor, that service provider is a service provider under the definition of CCPA. Because if you put a button, if you put a do not sell button on your website, disclose that you sell information in your privacy policy, link to that button in your privacy policy, you know, surveys that have been out, I think it was an Ad Exchange survey that just came out recently, indicate that 85% of people are going to hit that button. And my bet, James, is that not all of them are going to be in California. And so you're going to have the added problem of figuring out whether it's a valid opt-out to begin with.
Yeah, that, which kind of leads me to my last question here. This isn't going to stay in California. Businesses in Texas and Illinois, where you are, and you know, Washington, D.C., where I am, consumers are going to be demanding these same sort of things from their local officials. Do you see this expanding? And does this make the case for why we need a federal privacy law, or maybe we don't need a federal privacy law? What's your view on that?
Well, I certainly see it expanding. I think that data privacy, you know, itself is a very popular concept right now. And I think you see that from both Democratic and Republican lawmakers in state houses and federally. I think that the CCPA is, you know, the first real comprehensive law that regulates and treats personal data, personal information broadly. You know, before you had data breach laws in which there were very narrow definitions of personal information, and of course they only applied if you suffered a data breach. Here you have a very broad definition of personal information, anything really that relates back to an individual as a functional matter. And a general regulation by California about how you use data on a day-to-day basis. If other states come out with similar laws, with similar structures, and there are contradictions or inconsistencies between the laws, that's going to be a real problem. It's not like data breach, where you only have to deal with 50 state laws if you actually suffer a data breach. Here we're talking about how you use data on a day-to-day basis. And so to the extent there's other state legislative initiatives here coming forward that are not similar or that are in any way different from California, well, that's going to be a situation that's ripe for preemption, because it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for businesses to comply with personal data requirements under CCPA in California, et cetera, with respect to California residents, and then different, separate, and perhaps contradictory requirements in Texas, California, et cetera. That just doesn't work. And that, to me, augurs a federal law.
Okay, I lied. I do have one more question. And,
okay, sure.
And that is, if you do run afoul of this, what can a business expect?
Well, I think the first and most important point is that if you run afoul of most of this, the only enforcement agency that is out there right now is the Attorney General. The only private right of action available to California residents, right now at least, is with respect to data breach. Now, I'm sure plaintiffs' lawyers will try to be creative and find other ways to enforce this law directly, but right now there are statutory private right of action damages available on account of data breaches. The rest of this is at least theoretically enforced by the Attorney General. And what happens if you violate the title? Well, if you violate the title, you can be subject to an injunction and liable for a civil penalty of $2,500. And it's $7,500 for each violation if it's intentional. And it's going to be assessed and recovered by the Attorney General in a civil action brought essentially by the people of the state of California. So they got to sue you in court, and they can assert a flat statutory penalty based on how much per violation, $2,500 for just a violation, $7,500 for an intentional violation.
Well, something tells me we're going to be talking about this for quite some time, because there's a lot more to come. Christian Audi of Bryan Cave, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it, and it's been a fascinating conversation.
James, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Program's Better Series. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Better Series by visiting our website, bbbprograms.org. Then click on the podcast tab. You'll find all of our episodes there, where you can listen on your Apple Podcast app or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.